Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
I'm reading a 2019 article from Surfing World, The Offbeat Genius of Tom Curran. And there's several articles there. And I have a friend who's an ex-old surfy and like me to podcast this. A Line in the Sand. This is about Norwegians coming to perhaps destroy our country. Who would have thought of it? Australia? Norway's a long distance away. But apparently they want to drill for oil in a pristine wilderness of Australia. Okay, the surfers of Australia have stood up for the Great Australian Bride. Words by Sean Doherty. So there's a sort of a surfers fraternity here, besides a whole lot of other things under the current. So surfing is really a one of the religions of Australia. All you need to know about the Bight and why deep water oil drilling is a very bad idea. Moments in two very different moods. Dan Ross above on a clean day and below a 16-metre storm swell there. So it's the same one, and you can just see a huge storm. My God, Father. It's the same area. You can see the same rock, obviously. Here, obviously, you can't see it, but it's a picture of this rock, a sort of idyllic rock, and then the storm comes in, and you just wouldn't be out on the surface of that. You'd be absolutely dead. Okay, reading this. So this is about Norwegian drilling. Anna Taylor is a mother of two who lives outside Elkston with her partner, Tim Jones. Very, very interesting to see how this is read, because I'm just, for some reason, the sentence structure just goes straight into my head. It's really interesting the way that's put out there. This, and I'm going to layer paint onto this idea, which is sort of different from the standard journalism, where you just can't layer any paint onto anything because it's their mental capacity is too low. So they would have forgotten mother of two, just cannot work it out. The family small acreage is an oasis of life amongst the dry, stony, steep paddocks that surround it. It's hard scrabble country down here in the Bight. Yet, so the Great Australian Bight is really that, a bite taken out of the bottom of Australia. If Australia was a cookie, round cookie, and someone was to take a big bite out of the bottom, that would be the Australian's bite. It flourishes in one of the harshest environments in the Australian continent. After the hottest, dry summer on record, the place is a riot of green. There's everything from stone fruit to greens to grapes, all fed with seaweed from the coast. Chickens and geese rule the yard. When we stop by, Anna offers a cornucopia of fruit. I pick a blood of plum and take a transcendental bite, whatever that means. Deep purple flesh fading into gold, ripe, a delta of plum juice running down my arm. It's almost incredible piece of fruit I've ever experienced. I eat three. It's really beautiful, but you can imagine this would not survive a newspaper article, isn't it? It's amazing. So it's basically sort of like a film thing where you pan in and you pan out, and you're unfortunately relying on the cognitive ability of people reading it. Anna grew up here and has surfed since her teens. Or she was a surfer, insisting that since the kids come along, she doesn't do it often enough to qualify for the title. In her 20s, she was a resident in the lineup at Blacks, at left reach just outside town. She had a reputation of being fearless, a little kamikaze. The coast means the world to her. Her dad's ashes are spread out at Blacks, and she and Tim take the kids sailing on their tiny skiff across Walgrave Island, and occasionally, when the ocean settles enough, all the way out to Flinders Island, 25 kilometres out to sea. While the country here is old and tired, the ocean teems with life. The other day we took the kids fishing down the beach, says Anna, and we caught all these salmon and we smoked up that will feed us for the next few months. While I was there, I thought about the most and almost started crying. Life we have here could be ruined so easily. And for what? How could I say to my kids, I did nothing to stop it happening? So I would assume that any type of surfing thing, the surfing magazine, you have to mention surfing pretty early on to get your credentials up. And here you've got to just move into your main topic. It could be ruined, and normally in your normal thing is your normal headline or newspaper article will put that piece of information right up the top. And when we arrive, and this is interesting, that in Australian, speaking Australian, there's plenty of time to get to your point. In fact, if you make your point too early, people just go, what? And it's sort of almost like, I don't know, the times of old when you needed to establish you weren't going to hurt each other and a certain level of other communication. Can't quite describe it. When we arrive, Anna is happy to see us. For 3 long years, she's led the Elston chapter of Fight for the Bight, the local group lobbying against the spectre of Australian bight becoming a deep water oil field. She fought to get the rest of Australia to see what's happening down here, but it hasn't been easy. I could tell you what. People are just dumb. A few surfers over east ever venture down here, and it's far removed from the Australian surfing consciousness. To most crew from the east, the Blight Coast is cactus and white sharks and heavy locals. It's remote, sparse, wild countries, which gets even wilder once you head out to sea. There's nothing between the Bight and Antarctica. For Anna, it's been hard to get people back east to understand what's brewing down here. But recent weeks, that's all changed. I obviously, my head spins and saying, what you really need to do is something called drone tourism, that is, that you can pilot, imagine internet, you pilot an internet drone from down here. It'll be really good. The first signs on February 21, 2 days earlier, a Norwegian oil company had formally lodged an application to drill the deepest oil well in Australia, almost 400 kilometres out to sea in the Bight. The application included the worst-case oil spill modelling that showed oil across the entire southern coastline of the country, lapping Tasmania before heading up along the east coast. It spread from Perth to Port Macquarie and everywhere in between. But this horror show wasn't exactly new. The Norwegians, a company named Equinor, were just the latest crew lined up to the frontier to drill on the Bight. And every spill model that preceded that told pretty much the same story. If the well blew out and they couldn't cap it, the southern coast of Australia would be an oily ruin. Anyway, I'd posted plenty of spill modelling over the past year without getting much of a bite. So I took the latest map, posted it to Instagram account, and it went for a surf without thinking much more about it. I came in an hour later and dried off and checked my phone. It had 8,000 likes. My Instagram account is a digital wilderness, and most likes I'd never had 1,000 for a selfie of my daughter had taken with Kelly Slater at Bell's last year. Something is going on. As I watched my phone, it chirped and burped digitally, and red shit was appearing everywhere. Likes, comment, reposts, the same image began to fill my feed. Over 8,000 became 10,000 within 5 minutes. Something was happening. Of all the posts that day, for reasons unknown, the giant finger of Instagram algorithm had descended from the clouds and pointed at my post. Isn't that absolutely amazing? It's interesting how the the intellectual prison is being broken by, I suppose, social media. I find that very interesting to look at. At that point, I remember I tagged Equinor's Instagram account in a post and told everyone to get over here, there, here, and let them know that they thought of their plans to drill in the bite. I checked out Equinor's account before I tagged them. Their most recent post features a harmless oceanic wind farm. Just a year ago, Equinor was known as Statoil, but had embraced themselves as a clean green energy champion. Anyway, I checked it out, and their wind farm as a photo had 10 comments when my post went up. When I checked the Equinor post after my surf an hour later, it had 6,000 comments, all of them from Australia, and all of them conveying a general sense of red hot antipodean outrage, antipodean outrage. They were brutal. Blight photographers Hayden Richard, South Australian Rips, was threatening to pull a roo tail out of the freezer in Nauru pub and wrap it around someone's head, office of Oslo, and that was one of the kinder ones. So they're trolling, I suppose. They don't know what they're thinking about. Of course, it's more than simply an Instagram post. There was something deeper being tapped into here, and all sorts of reasons why this was happening. For surfers, it was an idea whose time had come around again. At points during the 70s, 80s, 90s, surfies led a whole range of environmental, social, political issues, Vietnam and sand mining, apartheid, ocean falls, whaling, nuclear testing, take your pick. Surfers were at a central point of activist consciousness in the country. Surfers really gave a fuck. There you go. Isn't that beautiful? But not so much lately. We've had it way too good for way too long, and it's created a high level of self-absorption. We've just gone surfing, but over time, the problems of the world have crashed our party. The coast has become a commodity. Big developers, big oil, big money, big marketing, even big surf. The pressure on the coastline has built slowly at first, then in the past weeks, all at once. The paddle out of Torquay on March 3rd was the first real physical manifestation of surfers pushing back. Torquay was smacking bang in the middle of a spill map and half the town surfed, so the paddle out was organised for Cozy Corner was a test. Oh, there we go. We're going to have to see a paddle out. And that is a fair number of people. I'd say that would be probably a picture of 1,000 people. I'll see what they say. After a generation of online clicktivism, would people actually show up? The thing was due to start at midday, and by 11 a.m. you were parking in Pride Street, 2 streets back from the beach. By midday, you couldn't move on the beach, and the only place left was in the water. It looked like a Winky Pop lineup for the weekend. There were thousands of people out there, surfers, clubbies and kids. Half the crowds were mums and dads and kids. My kids were out there, and they weren't there simply because everyone else was. They also knew who Equinor were and knew what they planned to do. This wasn't a radical fringe. You couldn't dismiss it simply as feral surfers in the same way feral surfers have been dismissed in the 70s. These were surfers today. The Torquay paddle out was unearthed a natural leader. Until that point, grassroots movements around the bite had just happened. But as soon as Damien Cole got out there on a homemade oil rig, some 2x2 timber sprayed black perched on a super squatch and whipped the crowd into a frenzy, yelling, "No way, Equinor!" It was clear who leader. The son of the legendary Morris Cole, and genetically predisposed to sticking it to the man, Damien, had already saved the farmland behind Bell's from housing development. But when he climbed up the rig and flipped double birds at Equinor sign, oh, this is the get fucked sign, he became a cult hero who'd soon be paddling out and flipping two birds around the country with Burley, Melbourne, Sydney, Newcastle, Cottesloe and Hobart. Isn't that right? So this is... I like that she's got no way, and the R is crossed out by no way, Equinor. Back down the bite, a new leader's emerged a few years back. Heath just had married a streaky bay girl, Lisa, and moved down to the bite. a former pro surfer from the east. He now works on prawn boats out of Streaky. It is regenerating 400 acres of sheep paddock and surf at the reef between Moments and Fowlers. If anyone knows how wild oceans can get out there and how dangerous dropping a deep oil rig out there could be, it's him. He met with Equinor and called them out a number of times about the sea state they believe they'll be working on. They patronised and told him to calm down. They only drill in summer, and the swells in the bight don't get over 3.7 metres average in summer. Heath pulled out his phone and showed the guy a buoy at Cape Ducolic was at that very moment reading 5.8, an average of 12 metre peaks. A guy from Equinor smugly pointed out that it wasn't summer anymore. It was March 6. Heath was affronted, has fronted surf resistance down here, but has worked in the background just as he surfed in the background for 30 years, as has been Camel Golden. Isn't that right? Isn't that summer? So it's December, January, February, March is only not more. Isn't that amazing? But actually, what the I don't know if you can imagine the waves off the Southern Ocean hitting Melbourne's spared, but if you just go around Tasmanian western east coast, they're just amazingly big waves. For all involved in this campaign, it has been an education. Equinor, then, when they submitted their environmental plan to industry regulator for approval, made it public. However, the public were given just 30 days to make comment on the 1,500 pages of dense science, broken up by pages of smiling Norwegian oil workers. Those interested in having their voice heard firmly on this had become experts in deep oil drilling, the marine ecology of the bight, and the geopolitics of the oil industry. The public were thrown in at the deep end, but over 31,000 of them took the time to read the plan and submit considered reference scientific response. Others simply replied with "fuck off, Equinor," but those 31,000 submissions fired a huge shot across the bow of the oil industry. Equinor said they wouldn't push through public resistance to sink their drill. They were beginning to realise just how much resistance they were up against, and then it even extended back to home in Norway. The unique aspect of the situation is that Equinor are two-thirds owned by the Norwegian people, and the Norwegian people have a powerful voice in this. The plan to drill the bight is happening in their name. The fight against Norway has been led, as it has been Australia, by the surfers. They have their own battles with Equinor. Most photos you have seen of surfing in Norway, those images of huge snow-covered bluffs and long left at one end and frosty stabby right at the other, comes from Lofoten Islands, north of Norway. Equinor want to drill there too. A small Norwegian surf community have opened up another front in this fight. And it's a powerful one. They've made noise at home and managed to get the issue all the way to the Norwegian Parliament. The solidarity between the two surfing communities on opposite sides of the globe hints just how powerful the voice of surfers could have it if they got their shit together. But the game, as it stands, is rigged against them. The Australian oil and gas industry self-lubricates. A closed circle of oil lobbyists, oil giants, and the feds. The graft is fucking eye-watering. Isn't that beautiful? And I think I use the word eye-watering. So this is something that is painful, upsetting. We use the word eye-watering. So this is just to give you an idea of what happens in Australia. But what a fantastic surfing magazine. This really makes me interesting. Okay. Under the petroleum resource rent tax, if Equinor well fucked up, the cost of the cleanup would be tax deductible for years, indexed annually at 17%. Meanwhile, the federal minister who originally sold the permits out of the bite became the chair of the oil lobby in Australia just 2 weeks after leaving Parliament. 2 weeks. They're so far up each other's arses, It's hard to tell where the politicians stop and the oil lobby start. These guys have been unchallenged for so long that they almost satirise themselves in the way they behave. You wouldn't make this shit up. This is what Anna Taylor is up against. This is what everyone is up against. What's happened in the past month, however, is bigger than simple protest about a hole in the ocean floor. It's bigger than the bite. This is a point in time for surfing and for the world. The day before, 3,000 surfers paddled out to Burleigh Heads to protest what was happening in the bite. Millions of kids all around the world wagged school and took the streets to protest their future being sold out. There's a change coming. The old world is making a desperate last stand. Australia has just experienced what will be our hottest summer on record. And our response has been to dig a giant hole in the earth in Queensland, a hole in the floor in the ocean, the Southern Ocean. For surfers of Australia, the bite is a line of the sand, and we really do consider ourselves throw-aheads. This is the time to prove it. Okay, well there you go, that's a beautiful article, and it just gives me lots of pleasure to read it. It's so lovely to read something truly Australian, truly surfy.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.